Good morning. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And first, thank you for being a great host. You didn't do anything. No, it's cool, man. Sometimes you get hosts that are helicopter hosts, and they like walk into your room, and then they don't want to leave, you know. But thank you so much. And thank you to the committee for just being, what a weekend. I mean, this has been fabulous. Ben, you're a class act, my friend. Thank you for everything. The greeters rock. There's medication available for all of you after the meeting. I know Lee a long time now, and he's always out there making good stuff for us to listen to, so let's give it up for Mr. Lee. Thank you, my friend. Love you. Before I get going, it's just I don't want to forget this. There's two people that here this weekend. There's a lot of friends here, but Bill Cleveland first. I've always looked up to him from a distance. I was in New Jersey, and he's on the West Coast, which when you're growing up in the Northeast, California is another country. But I always listened to him, and we got to speak one time. I met him the first time in British Columbia, and this huge guy walks in, and he's got this long coat, and he's smoking a cigar about 3 foot long. And I says, "He's definitely in the mafia, in the witness protection program, hiding out in AA, you know." But Bill, thank you for just being a power of example for so long. And the other guy had to leave this morning. It's Chris R. And when I first started getting out, we shared the same sponsor, Mark H., for a long time. And one of my first big outings was to Iceland. And I was with the Rhema boys. And, you know, I'm new. About 10 years, 11 years sober, thereabouts. And I was petrified leaving the country and doing this. And Chris has always been like a big brother to me. Always looked out for me, and he was one of the first guys, along with some other men in my life, who warned me about the dangers of getting out speaking. It looks attractive, but they warned me not to fall in love with this, that when I get to home group, go pick up some chairs and things like that. So very blessed for the men and women who have been put in my life. I just want to say one more thing. I saw a lot of friends from New York and Jersey here this weekend, so please make yourself at home, hit somebody. And and in New York and New Jersey, we really laugh about that because it's just... June 23rd, 1988, it was an 11 God separated me from alcohol. I'm very grateful for this gift of sobriety. I have a home group. It's called Alcoholics and God in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I have a sponsor. His name is Bob Azans from St. Paul, Minnesota. And I've been overpaid and overblessed because of Alcoholics Anonymous. So my walk here is to chop wood and carry water and pass on this message that's been so freely given to me for fun and for free. The longer I'm sober, I've shared this from a million of these podiums, the longer I'm sober, and quite frankly, the older I'm getting, you know, your point of view on a lot of things change, on what's really important, what you really value, and what does my walk look like. I have found that the walk is really the sermon, not so much the talk. I mean, the words need to have depth and weight, but if I'm walking the walk, I can say a lot less. And what has become incredibly important for me is about relationships and letting men and women know how I really feel, how close to my heart they are. Because I don't know if I'm going to see them again. And for me, and we're talking about 10 and 11, it's about bringing me to this place called the sunlight of the spirit to have a relationship, an intimate relationship with this God. And for me, that's at the top of the list. What does my relationship God look like? What's that walk look like? Whatever God it is that we're praying to or serving, hopefully. Do I commune with this God? What does that look like? How am I when I'm alone and quiet and there's nothing going on? Am I talking about God? Am I hiding out? Because it might be offensive. I can't hide out. Because if I stop talking about what I believe in, I'll stop believing in it. So sometimes it feels like we're standing alone on the firing line and going to draw fire, but I got God's bulletproof armor on me. I need to talk about this stuff. I need to talk about this book, our sacred fellowship in this power called God, and bring a newcomer and put that newcomer's hand in God's hands the way guys like Bill and Chris and other men put my hand in God's hand and not lead them astray. What do my relationships look like with other folks as well? Am I cleaning up old scrapes? How could I walk into the sunlight of the Spirit or tell you I'm in the sunlight of the Spirit? What I harboring a lot of icky feelings about men and women who when they walk in a room, there's tension. I'm not comfortable. I'm slandering. I'm gossiping either inwardly or outwardly. Any opportunity to do that, I pounce on it. For me, that's a lot of weight. My sponsor calls it plaque on the soul. And what I do, you know, I'm not a model nor am I an example for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just my walk. And that's what I'm here to share, my walk with you, have a conversation with you about where God has brought me to. What do my relationships look like? I don't want to put my head on the pillow and wake up and find out someone passed. And I should have. And I could have. And I missed it. And there's no guarantee I'll be here tomorrow, a week from now. I don't want to close my eyes for the last time harboring that stuff I would have or I could should have. I don't do any of this perfect, by the way, but that's been my walk for a number of years now. And my wife has encouraged me. We do that a lot. Bill was talking last night, and I'm going to paraphrase how blessed we are to do this walk, that we're alive. And sometimes you can lose sight of that, you know, going to meetings and sponsoring and do all the things we do. Sometimes we got to stop and say, I'm upright, sober, and sucking air. This is unbelievable. And this thing called sobriety, how incredible, fragile life is, and as well as sobriety. I mean, I can go to church all I want, go to all the meetings I want, write all the inventory I want, call my sponsors as much as I want, do all those things, sponsor men, and yet sobriety is still very fragile the way I look at it. There's no lock. There's no guarantees. As soon as I claim I'm spiritual, I'm probably not. As soon as I claim I got God, I probably just lost it. But it's in the striving. It's a walk towards humility rather than a struggle towards perfection. It's just a chop wood, carry water. And I have this mind, this alcoholic mind, where the main problem sin is, that's not going anywhere because I'm sober a number of years and a member of good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. That mind's not going anywhere. It gets silenced, it goes dormant a lot, but it likes to get involved with stuff and do the thinking for me. You don't need to call your sponsor today. You can skip church. You don't have to write that inventory. We prayed last week. We don't have to pray today. And little by slowly, I get a little bit of distance. I can never be separate from that power which I'm connected to, but it's a sense of separation. I'm kind of getting away from God. I'm getting away from you. I'm kind of resting on my laurels. And then I start to isolate, and the self starts to take over. And the more I isolate, the more I suffer. And now I'm falling prey to temptations that normally I wouldn't, just to erase this uncomfortability I have, those bedevilments we talked about over the weekend. And for me, my alcoholism will go underground and resurface in other areas when I'm like that. They're called sex sprees and food sprees and money sprees and gambling sprees. And I'm just not okay. I'm not okay. I pretend I'm okay when I walk in a meeting. I'm oming when I walk in. How you doing, Pete? I'm wonderful. But if you saw me in the car or in the supermarket or on the elevated, I'm not that same guy. Or when I get home or when I'm with my wife alone, I'm not that guy. So I need to really get time with God and commune with God. And instead of going to God with my plans and designs and looking for God to be pleased with me, I need to be pleasing Him and ask Him, what do you got for me today? He'll always load up the tool belt to do His will. I'll never go without. It was a long time for me to come to those kind of realizations, those aha moments, that I'm here to serve one power. For the longest time in AA, I did what my sponsor did and what the elders would do. I believe that I wanted to be so much a part of you. This is the last house on the block. And God's mercy has kept me here. But they would tell me that sobriety is the number one priority. Sobriety is the number one priority. And I would say that and I would believe it. But the truth is true until I discover a new truth, yeah? Now, sobriety is certainly a priority in my life. But my number one priority is having conscious contact with God, not walking around with unconscious contact with God. It seems to be when I'm awake to God, when I'm in that light, a lot of things that would normally irritate and plague me, the restless, irritable, discontented, the rids, seem to go dormant. I'm not hurting myself. I'm not inflicting pain on my will and anyone else. And I'm traveling a lot lighter. And that's been my walk, to have conscious contact with God. And He'll use people, places, and things to make that happen. The walk, the call to sanctity. And they're probably never going to get there, but it's a walk to that. It's way beyond the drink. I mean, it's always about the drink, but we're not even talking about drinking here. I'm talking about, for my relationship with God, what does that look like? What does growing in understanding and effectiveness mean? How do I get from a fall-down drunk who was living in an abandoned building, seven treatment centers behind me? I was literally a bum on the street in 1988. No bathing, no eating, ripped up clothes. I reeked. How did I get from there to having God the most important relationship in my life and being a member of Good Standing in Alcoholics Anonymous? I have nothing to do with that. And I won't take credit for it. God gave me a G.O.D., a gift of desperation, on June 23rd, 1988, in the back of an abandoned building. I didn't have the ability to be desperate. I was desperate, but God kind of pushes you over the edge where, what are you doing? I want to do what you're doing. And it has to come a point, what I get to do here is little by slowly start to starve that ego that wants to take over and feed the soul rather than the other way around. I get soul food in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I'm not doing that, and I've been on the other side of this, I know what it's like to run around here a little untreated and edgy. The mind sees, the mind hears, the mind speaks, the mind does. And that's an awful place to be. And what happens in this conversion, I start to operate out of the soul, little by slowly. Not perfect. But I start to hear from the soul, speak from the soul, start to see from the soul. The soul is always right. It doesn't need to tell you it's right. It just walks right. And so as I get into this place called the world of the spirit, what God does in His mercy and love is shut down the ears to the mind and opens up the ears to the soul. That's why so many of us walk light. There was a gentleman, my grand sponsor, Don P. When he would walk in a room, he didn't have to say a word. He just walked in. He said, I got to get around that guy. What's going on in him? It was the soul taking the lead. That's the goal. That's the journey. That's the experience for me. And when that's happening, everything else I do seems to be doing a lot better. My relationships are better. I'm taking care of myself better. I'm eating better. I can sit in a group business meeting and not have to go home and write inventory. I mean, I'm doing pretty good. June 23rd, 1988, I'm living in an abandoned building. I have six treatment centers under my belt. I had no idea I was about to enter the seventh one. I didn't even think treatment worked. I knew AA was a cult, and God, I wanted nothing to do with that. I was never atheist. I despised God. I hated God. God gave me an alcoholic mama addicted to narcotics with mental health issues who committed suicide in 1974. She cut out. And it took me years in here and years in outside help to say, I'm angry with her. And I was left with a guy who was cunning, baffling, and powerful. I called him Dad. We never got along. Anyone watch the movie Goodfellas, Robert De Niro guy? That's my old man. I'm into hippies and music. He was convinced he picked up the wrong kid at the hospital. I mean, we just different ways. And my mom and I got along a whole bunch. But June of 88, I'm laying in this abandoned building and hating God. Hating God for taking my mom, for giving me this dad, for turning me into literally a Bowery bum. I was the guy who panhandled on the corner or rip off anything and jumped the turnstiles to get on the train and wasn't bathing. I hadn't had a square meal in I don't know how long. I was wearing construction boots and a right boot was missing a front. My sweat socks were filthy. I was cold and sweating at the same time. I had bloodstained soiled pants on with holes in them. I didn't care. Because what I need is to get money, panhandle, and get to the liquor store to buy whiskey. Because if I don't get whiskey, I get really sick. And I'm addicted to Valium at the time. I had some experience with non-conference approved dry goods. And after the fifth treatment center, I left that behind. But I could not get away from pills and booze. It owned me. I'd go to any lengths. any lengths, whatever that meant, whatever that looked like, to get money to get to the liquor store. It wasn't about, maybe I'll have a drink and calm down. I need a drink, and I'm not coming down. I just need a drink to stop this. And there's a moment, a lot of us get there, with these moments of clarity where we take a look in the mirror, or we hear our children. Bill was talking about, there was this daughter who sits on the lap, and they look at us, and there's that moment of clarity, like, how did I get here? This was not the plan. I can't take the pain and suffering. And you're in this place, this dark hole, where inside I remember walking the streets and screaming inside. And I know I can't get out. I know God's not sending any life rafts for me because I've let Him know how much I hate Him. And my family closed the doors on me. I remember one time, it was about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, I'm roaming through the streets of the Lower East Side of Manhattan, really bad area back then. And I realized if I get shot, run over, stabbed, something fatal happened to me, no one's going to know. I didn't have like a wallet on me with ID. I'm a John Doe. God knows when my family's going to find out. It's the most frightening thing in the world, that totally alone, and you see people walking around, and I've lost contact with everyone. Until June 23rd, 1988, and I'm laying in the back of this abandoned building, and there's another day, getting up off the floor, vibrating, cold and sweating, and I want to die, and I need to get out there and somehow panhandle money, humiliate myself some more, get to the liquor store. By then, we're on a first-name basis with the liquor store. You don't even say what you want. He just goes to the shelf and puts it underneath the glass partition. And you don't want to look at him anymore, because you went there like 8 times the day before. Just to get a pint of whiskey, okay, what do I do with my life? Why can't I just die? But this particular day, you know, sometimes even now, I can't hear God coming. Same way I can't hear my addiction, my alcoholism coming towards me. I couldn't hear God coming. I didn't know He was about to uproot my entire life and put me on a course to get me with Him, to talk about 10 and 11 this morning. This whole thing makes no sense. My life, Alcoholics Anonymous, if I can be so bold, makes no sense to a logical mind. Most of us, I'm one of them, are probably locked up last night trying to get bailed out this morning on a Sunday morning. Not drinking coffee saying, hi, how are you today? I get up off the floor and then I collapsed. I remember this, my God. As I'm telling you this, for some of my chest is shaking telling you this. And I collapsed on the floor. I didn't pass. I just collapsed. My knees buckled and I went down. I have the strength to get up again. I weighed about 130 pounds back then. I'm a little over 200 right now. I had the look, the drawn cheekbones, the sunken eyes, the black eyes, all of it. I'm urinating blood. I'm running around with hepatitis C. Like I said, I'm about 130 and I'm weak and feeble. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into sacred rooms called Alcoholics Anonymous. And in that moment, I'm on the floor and I can't stop crying. It's like something split me over. The fist of Gulliver reached down and pulled out everything. And I didn't know what was going on. And why can't I stop crying? We live life forward and understand it backwards. I realized it was all purging, years of purging, of betrayal, humiliation, degradation, the terrible things I did to people. And I wasn't a violent drunk. I wasn't a guy with a gun. But just the stuff we do, just showing up drunk is harm. I'm going to be there. We're MIA. And all the busted relationships, and it just came on me. I was filled with humiliation like I never experienced before. And the only place for me to go to in that moment, God opened up the door. I'll never forget what I said either. Please take me from this. I don't want to die. I wasn't thinking about it. I need to go to detox, then treatment, then to AA, do 90 meetings in 90 days and be Moses on Monday. And again, live life forward and understand that backwards. I'm so grateful that God kept that out of me. I was out of my mind for a few minutes, which is a great place to be. It's when I'm in my mind, I have problems. I'm living in the wreckage of the future, remorse and resentment and guilt about the past. I'm never okay. All I know is I don't want to die. I'm glad God didn't give me anything to figure out. Because if I said to myself, okay, I need to make a phone call, get to detox, get the treatment, go to AA, I'm still steering the car. I think I know what's right for me. And all I was seeking was comfort, to feel better, not necessarily to get better when I do that. And God removed all of that. I didn't know that then. Desperation, the gift of desperation. It's a moment for, we can get it in recovery too, because I've had it in recovery, where desperation screams a little bit louder than the ego, and suddenly we're beaten to a state of reasonableness. I said, what are you doing? I'm following you. Tell me what you did. I got nothing here. Please. Please take me from this. I don't want to die. And a series of circumstances happen. My dad was in Atlantic City, New Jersey, with his wife for a few days, hanging out. And earlier that morning, around 2 or 2:30, he was jawed out of his sleep, basically, and was getting dressed, and he woke his wife up. She said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to look for my son. Her reply was, we haven't seen him in forever. Where are you going? He said, I don't know. I got to find him. Something, he called it his gut. Something in his gut. Got to find my son, Peter. He called it God later on in his life. And my dad set out on the from Atlantic City, New Jersey, to the Lower East Side of Manhattan. If anyone's in that area, it's a long drive. It's a few hours without traffic into the worst parts of town. This was a guy who used to show a little 3x5 picture of me to the crackheads, the winos, the junkies. Give him $20. This is my son. Where is he? Look for me. And he heads into town, and he finds me standing on a street corner later that day. I'm tore up from the floor up. I'm vibrating. You know, the crying jags, I want to die. I know I reek now. I'm embarrassed by how I look. I had the realization of what I look like right now. I felt feeble. And my dad drove up, and he saw me. And he gets out of the car, and he just called my name. And the very first thing that comes out of this alcoholic mouth is, I'm fine, Dad. I'm okay. Not like, oh, my God, I've been praying. Oh, you got $20? Can you loan me $20? And my dad just kept walking. I can see it. And when he got to me, everything changed. Our roots were grasping new soil. We were first uprooted. We didn't know this was going on. My dad was not a godly guy back then. Nor was I. But I told God earlier, please take me from this. I don't want to die. And the dots got connected. Richard Ross says, we fall up after that. When we hit that kind of bottom, there's no other bottom really to hit like that anymore. And God started connecting the dots. I don't know any of this is going on back then. Just things are happening. And I'm out of the driver's seat. My dad got to me, and when he got to me, I remember I kind of collapsed. I went limp. And he held me up. He put his hands under my arms, and he was holding me really close. That kind of proximity we didn't have since maybe I was 4 or 5 years old. It was like that. And I was very much aware of, oh my God, I'm hugging my dad. And as silly as this sounds, I felt like a little kid in the arms of his hero. I thought, one thing about my old man, he was the alpha male. If you're in a foxhole, you want him in there because you're getting out. He was that guy. And I knew with him like this, somehow I'm going to be okay. I don't know how. And I remember my dad keep repeating something over and over and over again. He's holding on to me. He's saying, I'm not going to lose my son to this. I'm not going to lose my son to this. Over and over and over again. Yeah? And I got placed in my 7th treatment center. A whole God thing. I couldn't orchestrate that. But I can tell you about it. It's unbelievable. We talk about having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the 12 steps, and Paul's going to do a fabulous job on that. It's a guarantee. It's one of the biggest promises in a book that this is going to happen to you. But the pilot light gets turned on. We get jump-started, for me, on June 23rd, 1988, when I don't even look anything near recovery, when I'm just full of desperation and willingness to do anything. That's the beginning of the walk. I don't have any information, but I'm already being transformed. And then I get to you, and you hand me on a silver platter all we get to do in here. And God feeds me with desperation, so I listen to you. I take no credit. I'm not being falsely humble for the years I'm sober. I can't. I'd be a liar. I came here with nothing. I didn't even know who Bill and Bob was after 7 treatment centers. I saw a picture of them. I thought they were feds. They were hiding out in AA. Then my whole family are like blue-collar union men. I said, these must be the union leaders that probably take, you know, bribes. I'll be the top AA guy if I paid them off, you know. In about 10 or 12 days, whatever it was, in the seven treatment center, they're taking me from group down to the medical office to do all these exams on me because I'm urinating blood. What's with you? I got the hepatitis C, that thing called interferon back then. What are you going to do? I don't know. I don't want to do this stuff. All of a sudden, I'm going, no more drugs in my body. Does it have side effects? If you look up hypocrite in a dictionary, it's an 8x10 of me. Don't worry about it. And I'm in so much physical pain at this point. I didn't bounce back from that, the emotional bottom, that thing. I can't get out. I'm in a vice grip, and it's getting tighter and tighter. I'm sitting in treatment. And you sober up a little bit. You start to look back, say, oh, my God. My family, who I despised, suddenly I needed them close to me. All the guilt and remorse. How are you supposed to sleep? You can medicate me all you want. I'm not sleeping. I want to jump through a window. That's what I want to do. I want this all to go away. If I just go to sleep and not wake up, I'd be better off. And they shipped me off to Minnesota. And I spent the year in Minnesota doing treatment and sober living and all that stuff. But I came in contact with folks at a meeting called the Three Legacies meeting. And I walked into a Friday night meeting. It was probably this big. And everyone was suited up. And there were greeters, and there were pictures, and there was a taper. And I was totally intimidated because I'm wearing my brother's clothes. They're too small. My brother's sneakers, they're too tight. It's wintertime, and I got like a windbreaker on. I'm pinned up against the back of the wall, and I'm shaking and baking. And I'm really intimidated by the crowd, but the soul was attracted to it. It was home. And I saw the smiles and the glowing eyes. How do I get on this team? I got to get on this team. If I don't get on this team, I'm a dead man. How do I get on this team? I got to stay. For the first time in my life, people were speaking something I could understand. When you talked about what it was like, what happened, I didn't get what it's like now because I'm so far away from there. But I got your brokenness. You were talking about me. There was a gentleman there, Chuck Rice, who's gone to the big meeting, this guy. You know, when you're new, you're walking, you try to front like you're around 20 years, and an old-timer says, you're new, come with me. He took me by the hand, literally. And he wanted me to sit in the front. I said, I'm going to sit in the back. I was embarrassed by how I looked. But he introduced me to a lot of men. I went back to the back of the room, and I listened, and that's what I would do on Friday night, and something was happening. I can't describe what. God, in his infinite mercy, was saving me once again. We can talk about, I can talk about God's love. We talk about God's love in here, but for the grace of God, we talk about that. We talk about God's power a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. For me, what's kept me together is not only God's love and God's power, but God's mercy. I truly believe God's mercy keeps AA doors open. Where else are we going to go? Bill talked about that last night. Where else are we going to go? God's love, God's power, God's mercy. With all this stuff, we're always trying to wreck AA. We're always trying to change AA. Some of us want to stay, and some of us don't. All the stuff that goes on, God says, you guys got nowhere else to go. Get along. Here's some mercy. I love when big bookers are on one side and non-big bookers on the other side, and you got the north and the south going at each other. And I'm sitting there going, if we all fight, where are we going to go? The Rotary Club? This is it. A lot of changes I hear about going on in AA. Some we like, some we don't like. We got nowhere else to go. I don't. So my journey began, and I have an assignment, 10 and 11, so God gets me there, gets me there. My journey began. And after a year, I was brought home to Brooklyn. My dad actually said, do you want to come home? And I found a little sober life in Minnesota. You know, a little AA job. Had some support, bunch of new guys rolling around trying to chase the old-timers. You know, we don't know what we're doing. We're going to a meeting. We're sharing, trying to sound profound. The old-timers, they keep coming back. But it was a thing. In unity, there's power, and I felt that kind of thing. We're going from meeting to meeting to meeting, and eventually I got home and I got a job. My dad helped me get this job, and little by slowly got my first apartment, and I get to talk about those things in Alcoholics Anonymous. We can talk about mechanics when we go through the steps. So soon when we do a workshop, we'll talk about some mechanics. But I can get a lot of information and lack of transformation. And it's really important to walk this out and tell you what it's like live for me. What's the results of living in this world of the Spirit who doesn't do it perfect? One of the best realizations I came to, because when I was new, I thought I'm in AA, have to be perfect. There's no more fear in my life, no more resentments in my life. If you let me, I'll part the seas in about 20 minutes. Just let me, you know. Is the realization, the aha moment that I'm broken and flawed. That's my walking around condition. That's how he designed it. And ain't that just great? How much liberation comes from I'm broken and flawed. He designed it, the greater need for God. In fact, you and me, we identify with it, each other in our brokenness. That's why we like to hear someone give a little testimony of where you've been. Oh yeah, you're like me. Even some of the flaws and brokenness we walk with currently. Whether it's alcoholism or just life situations, we're in it. But we got a leg up because we have a God and a big book in this glorious fellowship to do life out there. A life that we live in a world of impermanence. It's unfair. It's broken. And somehow our brokenness navigates through that because of God. Where would I be without this? And so I find a sponsor in Brooklyn, and, you know, he wasn't very popular back in Brooklyn. You can tell I'm not from Oklahoma, Cliff, by the way I speak, by the way. He wasn't popular. You know why? Steps from the big book and the traditions are really important to him, made him really not very popular. He came at you with the book. You knew what you were in for when you said hello to Tony. By the way, everyone in Brooklyn's named Tony, just so you know that. My family, during Christmas time, you say, Anthony, Merry Christmas, 45 guys turn around. It's just like that. But I approached him because he sounded like those folks in Minnesota. And we began a journey through this book. And as little by slowly our self is starting to die, I start to touch this spirit. Little by slowly, I'm not getting a sense of who I am from this thing called self. Because as long as I'm involved with self, I can never become whole. As long as I'm involved in my plans and designs of where I'm supposed to be, what I need to be okay, seeking comfort at any lens, I lose touch with this thing called the soul. And what the steps allow me to do is kill off the self. Little by slowly, get away from self, get unhooked from self. The less self, the more God. And I can't even, I have the ability to do that, but the steps do, because it's all God. And so something happened as I started making amends. Things started to change. My point of view started to change. Relationships started to change. How I was looking at life and all of it was starting to change. Everything started to get illuminated for me. I was seeing different. I was hearing different. And I'm walking around making amends, doing drive-by amends on certain days, paying back the money I needed to do. I had to go make amends to my dad. And my sponsor didn't tell me when to go or not to go. It's between you and God. But I would walk this out. He's heard it all. I'm sober a while. And I'm cleaning up the wreckage of my past. And I have a prayer life and I have a life of meditation. And one day I sat down with my dad. I had an envelope full of money to make a start. I couldn't afford what I owed him. And I sat down with my dad and I began the approach. And it was a difficult one, emotionally challenging. It was difficult to sit, look at this guy eyeball to eyeball and say, here's what I've done. And I began and he stopped me, put his hand up, stopped. He said, all I ever wanted was my son back. He didn't take the money. I put that money back into the universe because it's not my money. And a short time later, my dad showed up at my apartment unexpectedly on a Saturday morning. And he was standing at the door with a box with a new coffee pot in there And another box with like cups and dishes and saucers, that kind of thing, a starter kit. And he said, can I come in? My dad, as tough as he was, very humble man. And I washed out the coffee pot. I had a little, tiny little table. It was just starting out. And two chairs. And I washed out the coffee pot. I made a cup of coffee. I'm a nervous wreck. I'm vibrating. I'm in really close proximity with this guy. Very intimidating guy. We sit down at this closed table. And he's staring at me. He was having the first cup of coffee together. He's just eyeballing me. And I'm thinking, he thinks I'm drunk. He thinks I'm high. I'm fixing my hair. I don't know what to do. I'm twitching all over the place. How you doing? I'm great, Dad. How are you? You know. It was months later. We're sitting at work because we worked together. And my dad said to me something that went like, remember that time we had coffee together in your first apartment? Yeah. In your new apartment, he says, I couldn't believe I was sitting with my son having a cup of coffee, and he was a man. See, my dad, when I was coming up as a kid, when I was in treatment, therapists, doctors, counselors would always tell my dad what to do with me, and he'd go right back at them, don't tell me how to raise my son. Until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he released me to you. Because he told me when I was making amends, whatever they're telling you to do, just keep doing it, have my son back. And I had that cup of coffee with them, and I hold on to that for a long time. My dad passed in July, the end of July. And the last time I saw him, I was in the hospital with him, and he was sitting in a wheelchair, and it was killing him. Just being there, I was humiliated by the whole process. And he had dwindled to about 115 pounds at this point. And he called me over. He didn't want to call the orderly. He says, would you pick me up and put me in bed? I'm tired. Yes. It was tough to feel my dad, basically skin and bones. And I leaned over and I went to put my hands on his arm so he can hold on to me. And I had this moment. That's exactly what he did for me in 1988 when he put his hands on my arms and held on to me and put me back to life. And there I am holding my dad. I'm pulling him out of a wheelchair. It was killing me to do this. But God gives us that kind of power. I put my dad in bed. I cracked a few jokes not to fool around with the nurses tonight. You know? And I kissed my dad and I left. And it was the last time I saw him. But this God allowed me to make that right. To walk this out. So when if I talk to a newcomer about what I do with 10 and 11, I have a story to say, this is what God does for me. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous does for me. And I'm not a special member. I'm just a member of spoken a really big wheel called Alcoholics Anonymous. 10-step, continue to take personal inventory. We've always heard that 10 is like a daily 4 through 9. It's a spot check. How am I doing during the day? Because if I'm not careful, my current reality will be a result of my thought life. That's a bad place to be. And if I let one resentment go by, it's no big deal. Minimize, justify, rationalize it away. A little fear, minimize, justify, rationalize it away. A little by slowly start to accumulate. And based on where I am spiritually is what I'm going to do, how I'm going to do life. All of a sudden, my stuff, self is back, becomes paramount. It's more important. I got this resentment and you're all going to know about it. Or I got some fear and I'm taking up 20 minutes in a meeting sharing about it, but I'm not getting out of the way. If I look at those big doors over there and I drop the sheet of loose leaf between those doors are going to open and close. They're unaffected. A couple of sheets of loose leaf, those doors are going to work fine. I put 10, 15, 20 sheets. That door is now jammed. It doesn't work properly. Take a couple of resentments, no big deal. Stop piling them on. I got plaque on the soul. I'm not working right. I can't work for God. I'm not serving you. I'm consumed with me again. How did I get here? And suddenly I'm walking around Alcoholics Anonymous with full-blown alcoholism because my alcoholism for me does not come in a bottle of whiskey. I thought it did. 7 treatment centers. I'm thinking the drink is the problem. I was the problem. This head was the problem. I can attend 50 meetings in a week and be worse off. There may be someone who bangs out 3-4 meetings a week, has a relationship with God and serving others. They're traveling light. My alcoholism gets a life by devouring mine. That's what it does. It says, I continue to take personal inventory and set right any new mistakes as I go along. There's my amends. I'm discussing with someone immediately. From my very first sponsor to Mark H., we used to have immediately, guys, give them spiritual consent. You know, I'm writing or talking to God about an inventory or something, and I need to talk to someone about it. And the sponsor's not available. So I'll call up Glenn and I call up Bill. Hey, if I'm jammed up, can I run this by you? They say yes, and they're going to help me with this. Hey, I'm hooked. Something happened I'm really angry about. How do I walk this out? What do I do here? Because sometimes I can't see or hear clear because I'm immersed in this resentment or this fear. I remember one time, Mary and I worked together at this big facility in South Florida, and the boss was pretty much a chauvinist pig. I mean, he treated women like garbage. And I walked into the office, into Marion's office, and she was hysterical crying. I said, what's up? She said, I don't want to tell you. She said, what's up? And she told me how my boss spoke to her. So I'm ready to go Brooklyn. And call a couple of those guys in the back to come with me. As God will understand this, I'll make amends after I beat him up. It'll be fine. And I'm you harmed her. I'm thinking I'm going for you. This is what a man does. And I got into the car. I told Mary, wait here, I'll be right back. And I know I'm getting fired. I got the intention of doing something. And I'm going to get fired. She's going to get fired, but it'll be worth it. I get in the car, and then God ruins everything. Because you know that little voice says, where are you going? You know? That little thing. See, there's a part of me, maybe I could speak for a lot of us, that's awakened in the light. And there's a part of the soul that's in the shadow. A part of us that's in the shadow. That doesn't know God. That's not enlightened. That's not awakened. That's why we have that thing that goes back and forth. You better not. I have to. And the dark side of me was talking, and then God got right in the middle of that. I said, I got to call my sponsor. I had it immediately. I didn't write any inventory. God, what do? Call your sponsor. I call up my sponsor, and I'm talking 100 miles an hour. I'm getting really angry. He says, let's pray. He prayed with me over the phone. He's now, let's walk this out. What's the resentment? What's going on? And I pretty much gave him an oral inventory. He pointed out some things to me. He says, instead of beating up your boss, don't you think your place right now is to comfort Marion and get rid of your ego? Sponsors have a way of getting us quiet right away. And I went in and I sat with Marion. And we walked that out together like a team. And she leaned on me the way I lean on her. Now, if I don't have a sponsor, I don't have a 10-step, I don't have a God, I'm getting locked up that day. And by the way, I'm not a fighter. Yeah. You know, but I would have made a good showing. Continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. We discuss him with someone immediately. We turn to God at once. Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then I turn my thoughts to someone and we can help. And love and tolerance of others is our code. I thought tolerance for the longest time was putting up with someone's nonsense. No, I can ask them to leave. But when I do, I need to teach them how to be better. Because the spirit of tolerance here is, I was just like you. I'm not going to ban you from AA. But I'm going to teach you. If you break a tradition, I'm not going to run around AA slandering you and gossiping about you. I'm going to pull you aside and say, hey, listen, we don't do that here. Now it's up to you. I work in the treatment center game. You know how many cats in AA are trying to run me out of AA because I do that for a living? In Alcoholics Anonymous. I pray for them because that's what my 10-step says. That's what my God wants me to do. Pray for forgiveness. Accept them for whom and what they are. I make a clean living. How dare you? I don't have to go around gossiping back about them. Because you know what happens? I drink the poison. Wait for them to die. A lot of meetings I go to, we read how it works. And it's important. But some of us have heard it so many times, you don't even hear it anymore. We sit in a meeting reading how it works. And maybe it is a new guy sitting, a new lady sitting there, and they're vibrating, rocking and rolling. When am I going to get through this meeting without running out the door and have a drink? When is this thing going to get off my back? When is this voice about having another drink going to go away? And we can read him this. We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Inwardly or outwardly, I'm at peace. I'm in a place of contentment. I'm walking light. And when the stuff happens, I have a God and a sponsor to go to. And when I fall short, I can make amends. But I'm not fighting booze anymore. I'm not trying to think the drink through, play the tape to the end, keep it green. God gets in the middle of all of this. This is one of the biggest promises in our book. It says this, I'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally. See, back in step two, we're shooting for sanity, and it's been delivered here. I find out my new attitude has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it or am I avoiding temptation. I've been placed in this position of neutrality, safe and protected. Then it says the problem has been removed. Imagine when we're new and someone says, whatever you got right now will be taken away from you, will be free. Where do I sign up? How do I get there? We've entered a world of the Spirit. My job is to grow in understanding and effectiveness and carry the vision of God's will to my activities. I would love to report to you I do this perfect, and I don't. Because very often there's God's will. My will looks a little bit better today. Sometimes they run parallel. And sometimes I look at God's will, my mind hears it as punitive. It's painful doing God's will. Look at me. I'm walking around. And very often, it's just the opposite. Doing God's will is just the doors open. Sometimes there's some challenges, and God gave me some light to walk through some darkness. I'm giving you this from my own experience. I got divorced many, many years ago. And I was embarrassed to come to an AA meeting and share with you I'm divorced. I thought I was a less than member in Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt like a failure as a man. I couldn't keep my woman. I felt like a failure in life. And she walked away with all the money and the possession. I still felt like a failure. And my friends circled the wagons like we do in AA and took me out to dinner one time. And you know, you're so immersed in yourself and your self-pity and your anxiety is taking over. You can't even look at food. You can't be there. I don't want to be around people. I just want to go back into the hole and cry. And as they were eating dinner, I excused myself from the table. I went outside, get some fresh air, and I'm standing in the parking lot. I began to weep. It wasn't that the marriage was over. It says, how did this happen to me in sobriety? It's not supposed to happen. I had the house with the white picket fence and the two cars, the whole nine. It meant nothing. And I quickly saw how my recovery based on external things, and I lost sight of this. And in the parking lot, once again, like I did in June of 88, God, please take over. I'm in too much pain. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get out. I had to get back in the saddle and go back to work for God. And I called Mark out immediately. Mark Houston was my sponsor. He says, Mark, here's where I'm at. Right now, crying on the phone. Instead of giving me some wonderful pearls of wisdom, he says, well, it looks like you need a new experience. Let's go through the steps again. I said, that's not what I want to hear. I'm out of work. I need a job. I need some money. I don't know what to do. Maybe another girlfriend. I don't know what to do. We're going to go through the steps again. But he was right. I got in my own way. I started to worship things rather than God. And it was a little subtle shift. I took my eye off of God for a moment. And then life happens. And it devours me all the time. I was brought up in AA. This is not right, not wrong. Some people write out this step. Some people don't. We were brought up to just put it on paper if you can. That doesn't mean it's better than anyone. It's just a different flavor. And so we were brought up, when I had an opportunity to put this stuff down on paper, who was I resentful at? Why? Where was I self-dishonest and frightened? Discuss it with someone. But many times I didn't have like the time with the boss and my wife and me to write anything down. I had to pray, call my sponsor and get direction right there. It worked. It's kept me buoyant. There was a time on my journey I got so attached to mechanics I became evangelical. If you missed the comma in the big book, you need to redo the steps. And there was a little competition going on how much more information they had than me or I had than them became like that. Rather than living this and walking with it and traveling light and having conversations with people. Instead of getting attached to one with God, I got attached to the big book and the mechanics. My big book, I love it. I love mechanics. They don't keep me sober. My home group, I love my home group. It doesn't keep me sober. My friends who I love and cherish don't keep me sober. They're all vehicles. They're all necessary ingredients to take me to that power, which is keeping me sober all along. When I was writing a fourth step, I didn't have much power, but somehow I stayed sober during that fourth step. That was God. And one day you wake up, you go, oh my God, it's God. Where you been? My 11th step has changed over years, as it should. Taking care, getting the soul food, growing and understanding effectiveness, yeah? In fact, I have a handful of men and women I listen to from AA, but most of the folks I listen to are not in AA. They're just talking about a soulful walk. It appears to my soul. There's something that acknowledges what it always knew. It's very attractive to me. But when I first got into meditation, I didn't know how to do it. And I was told how to sit in posture. And what is prayer like? Who am I praying to? Help is a total, complete prayer, by the way. I'm not there to petition, but more to listen. In fact, my prayer is now much different when I first came around. There's a lot of asking going on. Now it's a lot of praying for other people, a lot of suffering in the world. I'm praying that suffering be healed if it's His will. Some sick friends, some sick family members, I pray for them. I ask, quite frankly, very little for me because after 35 years, God has taken pretty good care of me. I'm not a rich man. I don't have a fat bank account. I don't have a big house on the water, but we have a life together. Walking in God's light. I've been way overpaid here. Soulfully speaking, I'm a rich man. I don't have a college education. I got through high school. It was the best 10 years of my life. But I'm done. There was a time where I went out and, you know, I got the CD meditation tapes. And I got the sage and I got the candles. I got the gongs. I got the chimes. I got the mats. And I'm lighting candles, burning sage, got the gongs going. It's like the Electric Light Orchestra. She was doing a concert for me. And I'm reading 24 hours a day, up around, reading all this stuff. I got to read all this stuff. I got to light all this stuff. I'm attached to this stuff. And one day I said, what am I doing? I'm worshiping idols. I had to go through that in order to come out of it. It was just part of my sponsors that never said, stop doing that. He was just encouraging my willingness to seek, yeah? And spend time in the sacred silence, go into darkness to see and silence to hear. I was doing it. I was walking it out. And then one day I stopped all of that. It's been that way for a while. I wake up sleeping for me is 5:30 in the morning. I'm up at 5, today 10 after 4. That's the way God wakes me up. And on awakening, eyes open, thank you God for another day. And trust me, you youngins, you get to like 64 and 65, you really say, God, thank you for another day. There's a lot more road behind me than in front of me, but there's a lot more God in front of me than behind me. So on awakening, thank you, God, for another day. I take a couple of beats, and then my feet hit the floor, and I have a little area in my home, always had it. I'm a Catholic, so there's a lot of Catholic-looking stuff there. I got some trinkets AAs have given me. It's a sacred spot. And I go there, and I pray. I love our Lord's Prayer. I love our third-step prayer. I love our seventh-step prayer. I love our serenity prayer. I say all of this. And at one point, I thought, if I pray hard enough, God is going to pay attention. You know what the prayers are? It's honoring God. It's centering me. It's getting rid of all the noise. I'm praying, okay, here I am, Father. And I pray for a lot of folks, as I said earlier. And then I go into sacred silence. And I was attached to time at one point in my journey. Got to be in there for so long and make sure you knew how long I meditated. I meditated for an hour. I meditated for four. I meditated for 18. I don't have a job. I can do this. Whatever God has me in there for. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, a half hour, 45, none of my business. I'm turning it over or I'm not. And then when I'm done with meditation, I make coffee. And over a cup of coffee, I like to gobble up stuff in the morning. Whoever the authors are, whatever I'm moved to listen to. They feed my soul before I get out there and, okay, world, here I am. Mary and I were traveling one time. We were going to Sweden. And I've been out of the country. I've never been to Sweden. Mary's never been out of the country. And we fly from Florida up to Newark Airport to cross over. Now, if anyone's flown through Newark Airport, it's not the training ground for spiritual growth. I mean, people are fed up with the day at sunrise. I mean, it's interesting. And we're in the airport. Marion's a prayer and a meditator, and we do our stuff together sometimes. And the airport, the air conditioner's not working. We're not sure what terminal to go to. We're kind of like wandering around. And I'm thinking, I have like a 7-hour flight overnight. What am I, Mr. AA now? What is this about? I'm traveling to Europe to do a 1-hour talk. This is insane. And Marion's doing a little workshop, and I look up, Marion's wide as a ghost. She says, honey, I'm afraid to travel to Europe. I don't know if I want to guys meet. I'm kind of getting kind of squeamish about this whole thing. I says, let me send him an email, a text, something. I'll make up a lie. We don't have to go. Right in the middle of the terminal, Marion says, let's pray. See, I'll pray anywhere. I'm not ashamed of praying. It's part of my 11th step. Cultivate my faithfulness means I hang around people who believe in AA and a God, and those who don't, when they're ready, I feed them. And I'm going to stand for my God. And if others are offended by my praying, write inventory. Protest. And so Marion grabs my hands, we close our eyes, we stop praying. And Mary came across a piece of scripture she was saying, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I'm not breaking the tradition, it's just what she was praying. This woman, we open up our eyes, this woman about 10 feet from us, smiling at us. Now, in Newark Airport, if a stranger's smiling at you, go to another terminal. And she walked over and says, it's so nice to see people praying in public. And a conversation started. And she was a Christian woman. She had family in Al-Anon. She knew we'd tell them what we were doing, going there to speak for AA and all that. She got it. And she says, I have to. She was on the same flight with us, by the way. So it was going to be a cool flight. A lot of things in common, AA, Al-Anon, our religion, all that stuff. And she said, I got to ask you, what were you praying? And Marion says, well, one of the things I kept saying was, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And she stopped. She's unbelievable. She says, I was getting dressed this morning after prayer, and I have a bracelet on my nightstand, which I haven't worn in forever, and something told me to put that bracelet on my wrist, so I put it on my wrist. She took it off. She said, I want you to have it. It's in our house now. Because what was inscribed on the inside of this bracelet is, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now I'm going to Sweden. Let's rock and roll. God has a way of showing up just to say, I gotcha. For me, my carpenter had doubt and skepticism. I'm going to have it. But his mercy says, I'm going to send a bill in to talk to you. I'm going to send Glenn over to talk to you. I'm going to send Mary and just give you a little pat on the back. So you're going to be okay. And we're okay. All the time. This week gets interesting. We got on the plane. We take off. The bells go off. You can walk around. She told us what seat she's in. I fall asleep and I have this dream that God says, I'm sending you an angel. I don't think much about it. Marion gets up and starts finding, goes to this woman's chair where she was sitting on a plane. Somebody else is sitting there. So Marion's going up and down the rows. Marion's an alcoholic. She's looking in overhead compartments for this woman. We can't find her on the plane. She's nowhere on the plane. It's a long flight. We can't find her. We deplane. We're one of the first people off the plane. We're stalking now. She never got off the plane. We saw her get on. She never got off the plane. We saw her get on the plane. She never got off the plane. It could have been a coincidence. I could have missed something. It could have been an aberration. But I've heard enough of your stories, your God stories. I've heard enough of religious experiences that happen to people who don't think they're worthy of them to make me believe that God knew her and I had a mission to do. He put us on, and we're about to bail because we're in fear. And God says, I'm going to send you one of my soldiers, and she's going to come as a delicate person to touch your soul, to get you to go speak for me. Never saw that woman again. But I have the bangle she gave to us. Knowing that I'm known by my Creator. So when I'm going through the day and I feel agitated or doubtful or both, it's because I'm trying to inflict my will on the situation. And I need to pause, take a beat. God, what's your will right here? And sometimes that pause can be a day, a week. I don't know. I'm not in charge. But I'll call up a sponsor. I'm confused about this. What do I do? We always get the answer. We always get the answer if I'm willing to hear it. The mind doesn't want to hear truth. The soul knows where to go. I just need someone to say, keep going. It's a chopping wood and carrying water. I've had incredible experiences in meditation. When I didn't expect them to happen, prayer and meditation, prayer and meditation, and I cultivate, keep the ground fertile, and God does the growing. I'm not in charge of the growing. I just suit up and show up. And I close with one story, which I shared a whole bunch of times, how God hears the soul. He knows the heart when it's weeping and it's hurting and it's confused that we get for fun and for free in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sitting on the edge of a bed in a blind drunk. I'm not in a blackout. A blind drunk. I'm in serious trouble right before I got bounced out and was homeless. And I'm rocking back and forth. And I'm cursing and I'm crying and I'm screaming at God that you took my mom from me. You ripped me off. And I was angry about it. And I was trying to negotiate a deal with God. If you send my mom down here right now, I want one hug. Can you do that, Mr. Miracle Guy? I want one hug and I will quit drinking. Obviously, that didn't happen. I get sober in 1988, and for some reason, I start going to church. I wasn't a mass attender yet, and I light two candles, one for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms, and one for my mom, wherever she is. They told me heaven. I don't even know what that means at this point. Every week, once a week, go to the church, two candles, sick and suffering, one for my mom. 9 years, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I'm praying, I'm meditating, I have a life of meditation. Have a life of prayer. Have a relationship with God, a relationship with you. I've gone through the steps. The ground is pretty fertile. And I go into this meditation like I do every morning, early in the morning. By the way, if you wake up really early, like it's happened to me, and it's 3 a.m., and you're wide awake and there's no problems, first thing is I want to go back to sleep, stay up. There's something that goes, the morning breeze has secrets to tell you, don't go back to sleep. God's about to lay something on you. He needs you alone. So I'm in this meditation, and what happens in this meditation was life-changing. Because I found myself in this meditation sitting on a beach. I love being by the beach. That God shows off for me. You see the power. And I'm sitting on the beach, and I'm out on the horizon. I see the carpenter, my God, walking towards me. And when he gets to me, out of his chest, literally appears my mom. My sponsor explained to me that's a signal for oneness. And I became this little 8-year-old kid. Now, I'm not aware I'm meditating. I'm in this thing. And there are no words spoken. And I became a little 8-year-old kid. When I was 8 years old, I was being sexually abused by someone. It was a horrible time for me. In third and fourth and fifth grade. Just nasty. God knew that. And my mom kneeled down on one knee and gave me a hug, the same hug I begged for in a blind drunk, gave me a hug. And I can speak for most of the men in this room, when you're having a tough day and you're a little guy and mom hugs you, you're gold. You're gold when mama hugs you. And I got up and I became an adult. And my mom held on to me one time, gave me another hug. And my God looked at me eyeball to eyeball without any saying anything in this meditation and put his arm over my shoulder without saying a word. He looked at me and said, "She's okay, she's with me." What my mom did was point off to the horizon at hundreds and hundreds of flickering lights. And then pointed off to the other horizon at hundreds and hundreds of flickering lights. And she began to weep, but I knew they weren't sorrowful tears, they were joyful tears. And she held on to me once more, and her and my God walked away, they became one, and I came out of meditation. And I don't know how long I was in there till this day, but I know I was weeping. I was completely moved. I was exhausted from this experience. And I went to the phone. I called my sponsor. I said, "Here's what just happened. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know about these lights. What are these lights?" And he said to me, "Peter, you've been lighting candles for your mom now for about 9 years. She let you know she got them." In that moment, I was changed. Bill talked about that last night. Those little moments that change us forever. Knowing that I'm known by my Creator, doing prayer meditation, who would expect something like this to happen, walking with this higher power? I'm no better, no worse than anyone else, but God loves us equally and will give us this kind of stuff. That's why these steps are so important and so powerful, how they're life-changing and transforming and revolutionizing. We get to travel light and be comforted with Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a Band-Aid on an open wound, and be comforted with this merciful God we found in here. However we want to believe, whoever we want to believe in, all different flavors, but somehow we do it. We just do it. For me, this is my Alcoholics Anonymous. It was given to a book, was given to me, not about AA. It says this, "May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protection for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with oceans to cross, a bridge for those with rivers to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic. That's all I got."